Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Shad here, your host for the weekend edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com. and podcast, The KE Report. On this weekend show, it was a bit of a slower news week in terms of economic data, and everybody, I think, waiting for that next Fed meeting coming next week. Overall, though, we're going to jump around to a number of different markets, try to get an understanding of if some of these markets, some of these sectors are going to break out of some ranges that they have now been in for around a year. We're kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief over at The Money Show. Now, Mike, first comment on the S&P. Let's look at this broad average and break down where it's gone. The S&P went through about a 10-month bear market after it peaked at the very beginning of 2022, bottomed in October, and now has had 10 pretty solid months. The market's been up 8 out of the last 10 months. And as long as it holds this month, that would also be 6 out of the last 7 months. So quite a run for the markets. They haven't made it back to those highs that we saw at the very beginning of 2022. But the biggest question for investors is, Mike, do you think these markets have gotten a little too overheated?
Sure. You know, that's a great setup that you have there. I mean, it really has been a heck of a run here, especially off this year's March lows. And then, as you pointed out, the October low last year for the S&P. One thing I think I continue to point out and is still why I'm leaning bullish. And I think, sure, we might be short term overextended, but I think in the long term, that be bold investing approach still works. I think that the biggest point I'd make is that, yes, what you described is accurate for the S&P. What's kind of behind the scenes is that all of this cycle's, this boom bust cycle's junk names, you know, just like in the dot-com era, all of that era's garbage stocks and so on, they did much worse than the S&P. I mean, the S&P had what, that 10-month or so, give or take, bear market. But when you look at behind the NASDAQ, and especially some of these companies that were, again, dot-com style, the losses there were 70, 80, 90%. They were over 18 months, and many of these companies just went flat out broke. So, you know, you cleaned out a lot of the excesses. So I think in terms of how many stocks and sectors performed behind the S&P 500 scene, it was a lot worse. The carnage was a lot worse. It was very much more dot-com bust-like. That's one of the reasons why, as we rolled into 2023, I was a lot more optimistic because, you know, you obviously had the big market averages that suffered. You had the worst year for not just stocks in a long time, but also stocks and bonds. I think the 60-40 portfolio, I forget what the stat was something like the worst performance in 100 years. So, I mean, things were, again, a lot worse than just what you'd see by tracking only the S&P. That conversely also is one reason why I think we're doing so well now. We really did clean out a lot of the garbage, and we did reset valuations, and we did reset investor sentiment, and all those things that were way out of control to the upside and too frothy. And that's why I think, you know, I'm much more optimistic, and that's why I kind of switched from that be boring investing approach I've been advocating for the previous 18 months. So I guess to tie it up with a bow, yeah, we're overextended now. Yes, sentiment at the retail investor level is pretty frothy. Yes, some of these indicators, put calls and ratios and things like that are indicating that the market's run pretty far, pretty fast. So, you know, we might have a seasonal breather and might see some weakness here for the next month or two. But in terms of long-term investor positioning, I don't think you want to get off that be bold train. I think that, you know, you've got a Fed that's moving to the sidelines. You've got a dollar that's weakening as a result. You've got an economy that appears to have dodged the worst of what could have happened given, you know, the sharp rise in interest rates. So, you know, with that sort of backdrop, I don't see why you want to be, as an investor, again, a longer-term investor, why you want to be getting off this train.
Well, Mike, hats off to you because you were spot on with the be boring part and the defensive play during the carnage, really starting, as you highlighted, in the middle of 2021, long before 2022 even arrived. A lot of the stay-at-home stocks and a lot of the cryptos and a lot of the growth tech stocks had already started rolling over. But now your be bold message was really spot on again because you're looking at the trends where they just stopped going down. They were already pretty beat up. A lot of the trash had been taken out. you compile a list from a number of analysts with the Money Show and a number of different thought leaders and kind of track some different stocks. Are there any themes that you're seeing? I know you have like a top 10 that you follow, but also you compile a big list of what's trending with other investors. Any patterns you're seeing develop there as far as folks getting a little more bullish now in the markets?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, we have a Money Show has been putting together a top picks report at the beginning of each year for decades now. And essentially we go out to all the newsletter editors and other providers, content partners that, you know, have been tracking the market themselves in many cases for a few decades and just say, hey, you know, what is your top pick for 2023? What are your, give us a more aggressive name and also a more kind of conservative one. Some of them just do one, some of them do two and so on. But anyway, and I track the performance of that. And through mid year, you know, we just published an updated report called The Terrific 10, which looks at of the 116 picks from 68 different providers for 2023, which stocks are in the top 10 and what do they look like? And, you know, most of them, to no surprise, given what we're talking about in terms of the broader averages, are from the tech sector. The number one stock was a company called MongoDB. MDB is the ticker. They're in the software space. That name was up about 130% in the first half of the year. I actually tracked it from January 9th, which is when the original report was published. You know, then you had other names like Shopify that were in there. And then towards the lower end of the 10 were your big names like Microsoft, Amazon, and Alphabet. So again, mostly in tech, but there were a few exceptions. Ironically enough, given that it's been a tougher market for junior miners in general, this one company, Bravo Mining, traded in Vancouver, actually has done very well. That was from one of our contributors. That was up about 83% in the first half. And then, you know, you had one or two other names, Celsius Holdings, which is the company that sells at like the energy style drinks, like Monster Beverage and so on. That company's had a nice rebound too. But again, mostly tech, a few exceptions to that. And I think that, you know, that is to be expected given what we've seen in the first half of the year. But one of my big theses and expectations, and actually from some of our contributors as well, is that you're probably going to see tech, you know, no longer be leading every day, every week, you know, being strong while other stocks aren't doing much of anything. I think a lot of people, myself included, are looking for the market advance to start broadening out, meaning tech doesn't start crashing or falling apart or anything like that, but it probably starts underperforming to some degree and some of the other sectors play catch up, your small caps, your energies, your industrials, things of that nature that hadn't really been participating. I think you're going to start seeing participate more. And then, you know, when you look at things like the IWM and so on, the small cap ETF, it's actually at what, a 5-month high here. So you're already seeing some of that healthy broadening out of the market. I think it was in one of our interviews, I don't know, maybe last month or the month before, where I laid out that things are probably going to go one of two ways. Either the rest of the market, or excuse me, either tech is going to play catch down to the rest of the market, meaning, you know, this was an anomalous advance for tech and it simply can't hold up while everything else lags, or tech's going to take a breather and the rest of the market's going to play catch up. And I think so far that, you know, in the second scenario was my favorite. And so far that looks like to be what's playing out. So that to me is bullish longer term.
So given this environment too, where we have seen higher yields and where investors do have an alternative, they can make safe yielding investments. Are you surprised that we haven't seen higher yield or higher dividend type stocks also get some more money coming in?
Let me answer that question first by giving a little background. I think one of the reasons why I'm less concerned about this sort of bullish overrun where everything, you know, we're in some big bubble again is that that's what we already had, right? It was ZERP. It was Zero Forever. It was TINA. There is no alternative, blah, 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 all those acronyms that in a zero interest rate world, everybody was just dogpiling into all the junk and chasing that because there was no competition. What we're seeing now, because short-term yields are in that 4.5-5% range, you know, maybe a little bit higher if the Fed hikes again, and because real interest rates are no longer in negative territory, this isn't more speculative. This is, you know, a better environment where people can say, some people are going to say, you know what, give me 5%. I'm fine with that. I'll just keep my money in money funds. Whereas before it was, I can't keep that. I need to just throw my money at every dumb idea out there. So in some regards, that competition for money is actually one of the things that underscores how this is healthier, because you're not seeing manic chasing behavior. You're seeing, like I pointed out, broadening advance. People saying, you know what, maybe I'll look at some small caps and put some money to work there. You know what? Financials were terrible at the beginning of the year because of the bank failures. Maybe I'll start to put some money to work there. Heck, you talk about some of the higher yielding sectors. While we're talking, I just pulled up the XLRE, which is the real estate, you know, the REIT ETF. It was performing terribly for quite some time, guess what? It's right around a 5-month high. So you are starting to see, again, so even some of those beaten down sectors start to attract money, as opposed to just an environment where it's only these money losing moonshot tech type companies and SPACs and everything that we're taking off. So, you know, as long as that broadening out is happening, as long as that you know, that catch up versus catch down scenario is what's going on, you know, I'm going to stay in the bullish camp.
Yeah, Mike, it is nice to see the broadening of the market and the catch up scenario playing out. And also just that there is an alternative now. People can put money in money markets and make a nice yield. So it seems like an overall healthier market that's really more dynamic and less funneled into just the same narrow tech leadership that it was when we came into the year. But one of the things that's been helping really all markets has been the U.S. dollar weakening. You know, we saw the U.S. dollar really peak last year above 14. I think it was 14.70, 14.80 it got to. It's been pulling back since the fourth quarter, but even recently it's continued to pull back, and a lot of machine trading is based off the health of the dollar. What do you make of that dynamic in the mix here?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the dollar last year, one of the reasons why gold essentially was flat in an environment where you would think, geez, everything else is doing poorly, you know, risk is up and so on, why isn't gold going up? Instead, I mean, it outperformed stocks dramatically, but it also didn't rise much of anything. Part of that was just because of this relentless dollar rally, which was based on the idea the Fed was going to keep hiking and hike to kingdom come, and, you know, and that is just a problem for anything that's a contra dollar type play. But yeah, if you once the Fed's eternal hiking approach sort of people realized, okay, this isn't going to go on forever. They're going to probably get to a point where they're going to move to the sidelines in 2023, plus other central banks were going to start playing catch up to the Fed. What happened? The dollar topped out last, you know, September, October, November, and, you know, we just hit that whatever it was, 14, 15 month low. I think that this move lower in the dollar is for real. I think that it's going to continue. I think that the interest rate differential scenario where the Fed's just on rampage and the rest of the world's not keeping up, that backdrop is over. So, you know, I think that, again, multinationals, dollar-sensitive commodity-type things, those are going to perform better just because I think I do think that the dollar rally is going to turn into probably a dollar slog. I don't think the dollar is going to crash, but I do think it's probably going to be continue to be weaker. And, you know, that's why you want to be looking at contra-dollar plays. You want to be looking at some foreign stocks, ETFs, things like that, and, of course, precious metals as well.
So is this dollar slag due to the fact that the Fed is, for the most part, done hiking? Is it due to the fact that other countries are going to start doing better? What is the reason for the dollar just slogging?
I'm going to say yes to both. As opposed, I'm going to say what you did, the two factors you just named are absolutely part of this. The Fed is, again, the Fed is no longer charging at the forefront of this rate hiking campaign. It's no longer hiking as aggressively and nobody else is keeping up. It's going to be a different scenario where other foreign central banks are still playing catch up to some degree, whereas the Fed can move to the sidelines. You know, the U.S. economy, I think, has cooled off. Inflation has come off the boil. It's heading in the right direction, and it's probably going to continue to come down, although I don't think we're going to get back into, you know, disinflation, deflation or whatever, you know, being a major risk. But in all those scenarios, to me, that's dollar bearish or at least dollar neutral. And it's bullish for commodities. It's bullish for gold. It's bullish for, you know, foreign equities over U.S. And I'd also point out a lot of our Money Show contributors have pointed out, and some of the people I respect the most when I read their big think pieces, and that, you know, foreign stocks have really dramatically underperformed the U.S. in part because the U.S. has all of the big cap major tech names that dominate the global averages. But, you know, if you get in a scenario where the dollar is getting weaker, some foreign economies look to be in better shape, the U.S., you know, Fed is not being super aggressive, then maybe this is a time for you to say, hey, I've only been keeping 10% of my money in international funds. Maybe I go to 20, or, you know, you start looking at some of these foreign names that trade in the U.S. or that trade in Canada or whatever that look attractive. So,
yeah, maybe a time to broaden one's search to some of the foreign markets that haven't had all that love, and they pick up a currency exchange perk from investors. But you mentioned the commodities there. You mentioned the precious metals, but we haven't really talked about energy and oil and nat gas. That's a big factor in inflation. It's a big factor in the cost of doing business. It's a big factor for consumers. Any outlook on oil or nat gas, Mike?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the situation there, obviously the Saudis are really trying to prop up the oil market single-handedly and with a couple of other OPEC members participating. They're not getting much help, in particular, I think, because of Chinese demand concerns. I mean, if you look across the globe, where is there some just economic drag coming from? And it's China. They're talking about doing some stimulus, but not on the order. I mean, not like the kinds of stuff we saw 10, 15, 20 years ago, where the Chinese stimulus would be hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars all in a quarter. They're spreading things out. They're doing stuff that has less of an impact on commodities demand. So I think that's probably the issue there. I'm a little, I'm sort of neutral, I guess, in that sector. I do think energy stocks are a pretty compelling bargain. I don't think oil prices are going to be falling much lower. Ditto for natural gas. But I think if I had to look where I'd be putting money in the commodity space, or again, I still like some of the precious metals because of the dollar kicker, or maybe some of the other economically sensitive sectors that aren't necessarily facing the issues that you're seeing in terms of oversupply with energy.
What about cryptos too? First of all, what's your outlook for Bitcoin? And being editor-in-chief at The Money Show, what sort of interest do you see in the crypto sector from your guys' conferences?
Sure. I mean, it's still not a big, I, despite the fact Bitcoin itself is up, well, I mean, pretty substantially year to date, it's like 80%, 85%, I think. You still don't have that crazy fascination and everything with it. I think because so many people got burned. Again, you look at Bitcoin and a lot of the crypto space, meme stocks, I mean, they started falling in late 2021. So the bear market was longer. The bear market was more severe. A lot of people got cleaned out. There were all the questions of fraud and is your money safe and this, that, and the other. So I think a lot of people are in the once burned, twice shy mentality, even though from a pure price standpoint or asset class standpoint, crypto, Bitcoin has been right at the top of the performance list this year. I think it's going to be more of a time, the passage of time before you see really, really, extreme excitement about it anymore. But I do think there's still that core community that we hear from that are still interested. It's still content people want to know about. But it's even with this rally that we've had in 2023, it's nowhere on the order of what you saw a few years back. So.
Yeah, but boy, oh boy, it's still around, right? And there is still a loyal following that seems to like crypto and seems to continue to trade it. And if anything, it does provide that sort of, I guess, volatility that some traders like. Mike, as always, thanks for chatting. Love hearing your thoughts on these markets and really appreciate just how accurate you have been playing the turn in these markets and not being too dug in on the bearish or the bullish side. So again, thank you very much for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Appreciate it, guys. You too.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.